people that needed, you know, someone to talk to, they would put on these masks and become mirrors that reflected back those feelings back to the person to help them process if they needed something to process.
This was in conjunction with the organizing efforts of other anti-authoritarian groups, such as the RNC Welcoming Committee in St. Paul and Recreate 68 in Denver, who were beginning to prepare for the DNC and RNC in their cities. The early planning was reflected in the values expressed in how things unfolded at the PNC, the RNC, and on the bike ride. Thus, after a year and 2 months of organizing, a group of about 40 riders and well-wishers convened onto Troy Community Garden on the north side of Madison, Wisconsin, on August 17th. Tents were set up, people played games to get to know each other, and the ride was initiated with its first circle, the group meetings for planning and consensual decision-making. A pagan ceremony which bonded the riders together and opened them to the powers of the earth, water, and sky aimed to create the strength to oppose the corporate power underlying the Republican Convention.
Welcome!
Welcome!
What we are doing here is a short but hopefully important ritual to send energy with you as you go on, do this powerful thing for all of us. Not all of us can go with you. What we want to do is to create a sacred space where we call in the elements of our being to bless us, have an opportunity for everybody to do a shout out and a release of any fears or anxieties that, you know, or anything that feels off that may be hanging around. And then we are going to pass the circle and weave a web of life and intention. We're going to create a fabric of unity and beauty and color that is what we are creating to replace that which is passing away because of the work that we're doing.
That was the Radish Collective from Springfield, Missouri, singing I Love Trash en route to St. Paul on the bike ride as the village stopped for 2 nights of community work and performance in Mazomanie, Wisconsin. The song is known to kids everywhere because Oscar the Grouch from Sesame Street sang it long ago. The three-rider Radish Collective song, which highlighted the value of living outside the American money economy and finding value in things that mainstream society would call trash, became sort of a theme song for the group along the ride. It is worth noting that the Neverwood Collective, unlike organizers of large bike rides such as Ragbri, a ride across the state of Iowa every year, wanted to make the ride affordable and accessible to everyone, whatever their means. Rider participants were asked to donate just $50, if they could afford it, for the 2 weeks in order to offset food and lodging costs. Ragbri, in contrast, asked riders for $140 for a week-long ride in order to pay for moving trucks to carry riders' gear and other luxuries the Neverwood Collective wanted to avoid. In addition to emphasizing interdependence and self-sufficiency, riders perform community service projects in the communities they pass through. They put the earth and community-friendly values into practice by using the simplicity of the bicycle as a means of self-propelling people over a long distance. Just as the low cost of the ride stood in stark contrast to the exclusionary and prodigal spending of the mainstream political process, its reliance on self-propelled transport was meant to stand in contrast to the powerful fossil fuel, financial, and insurance interests underwriting the Republican and Democratic conventions.
First of all, a very great love of bicycles. Mm-hmm. I'm a cyclist for transportation, so I don't own a car. I use a bike to get around, and especially because I've never gone on a long-distance bicycle trip, but that's something that I've been really seeing myself doing more and more and more in the very near future, and I thought this was a great way to kind of get my feet wet in that. And on top of that, just the fact, the basic principles behind this ride, the idea of grassroots democracy and direct connections with people, and the fact that I was going to be going to the RNC anyway to express my disinterest, my dissent in in the two-party system and in our electoral politics as they stand in our so-called democracy. And so I thought this was a great way to have a whole nother journey to get there besides just going to the protests.
Right.
As the wheels of the bicycle are turning, the wheels of my mind are turning, and I'm having, like, thoughts about how the village is getting along with itself and built in structure that's created an environment and a mood where people can get alone time and reflection time if they need it by biking the very well thought out and directed route that is outlined in the ride guide. And so you can ride alone for a couple of hours and have a lot of time to yourself in solitude, but yet you still get to participate in the larger village life. And so the bicycle actually has a social impact. It's not just a form of transportation, an alternative to the oil and gas economy-powered transportation system that we have. It's also giving us a way to organize ourselves differently in our culture so that individual needs and group needs can be better met. And so that's something that I've been observing about the group dynamic.
Say if we were going up in groups and cars, you'd be stuck with that one group in the car, but in the bicycle there's a constant flux of groups that are interacting together with the group.
Mm-hmm. And so it gives you the chance, too, to move between groups, which creates more diversity, more democracy, more growth, more, you know, exploring, because it's in motion always. There's always a shape-shifting element to it. It's always in flux. It's changing. And so we're really living in a
mobile village.
Yes, there you go.
In flux village.
Yeah.
Many of the bicycles were mile-worn, rebuilt, and modified by the riders, towing heavily loaded carts or carrying baskets constructed by the riders prior to the convention. How they went was important to people as where they went. Most of the riders were already committed to biking as their main form of transport. Some discovered how easy cross-country biking proved and swore to continue it later, and others, such as Gabriela Villacades, who had come from Quito, Ecuador, to participate in the ride, were committed to political action around the bicycle.
I'm Gaby Villacres. I'm from Quito, Ecuador. I came to the ride to tell my experience about bike activism in Quito. And I got involved with the grassroots caravan because a friend of mine, who's also at the ride at the moment at the village, he last year he worked at my bike fundación, at the bike fundación where I worked. So he was who contacted me to this great project. I've observed that as we share our goals and trying to involve Quito, this nonviolent village has shown me the great community work. We've been staying in farms, and we've seen all the community, how the communities can work together and be powerful. That working this way can keep can maintain the goal that we want. We don't have to follow the big masses, but we can also show them that it is possible still.
The accompanying kitchen, the Downhome Hospitality Cafe, was towed by a vehicle powered by vegetable oil, which was donated along with much of the food from communities along the way. For Calico Future, also a bicycle activist in her home city of Louisville, Kentucky, the PNC and the grassroots caravan was her first trip with her newly started activist kitchen.
So I'm Calico Future, and I'm a cook.
And that was most of Sprouts. Hey, you're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM and freakradio.org. It got put on a little late. We're working on training. I'm still completely untrained, so hopefully things will be better for the next Sprouts show. I believe you can probably get Sprouts if you're interested by going to an appropriate website, but hey, who knows? Coming up next, it's Bathrop Spears Broadsides, the December 4th, 2008 edition. Stay tuned.
As I dreamed out one evening by a river of discontent, I bumped right into old Tom Payne as a running down the road he went. He said, I can't stop right now, my son. King George is after me. He'll have a rope around my throat and he'll hang me from the Liberty Tree. I will dance to Tom Paine's bones. Dance to Tom Paine's bones. Dance in the oldest boots I own to the rhythm of Tom Paine's bones. I will dance to Tom Paine's bones. Dance to Tom Paine's bones. Dance in the oldest boots I own to the rhythm of Tom Paine's bones. He said, I just spoke about freedom, justice for everyone. Ever since the very first words I spoke, I've been looking down the barrel of a gun. They say I preach revolution. Let me say in my defense, all I did wherever I went was to talk a lot of common sense. I will dance to Tom Paine's bones. Dance to Tom Paine's bones. Dance in the oldest boots I own to the rhythm of Tom Paine's bones. I will dance to Tom Paine's bones. Dance to Tom Paine's bones. Dance in the oldest boots I own to the rhythm of Tom Paine's bones. Well, old Tom Paine, he ran so fast, he left me standing still. Here I was, a piece of paper in my hand, standing at the top of the hill. It said, this is the age of reason, these are the rights of man. Kick off religion and monarchy, it was written there in Tom Paine's plan. And I will dance to Tom Paine's bones. Dance to Tom Paine's bones. Dance in the oldest boots I own to the rhythm of Tom Paine's bones. I will dance to Tom Paine's bones. Dance to Tom Paine's bones. Dance in the oldest boots I own to the rhythm of Tom Paine's bones. Old Tom Paine, there he lies. Nobody laughs and nobody cries. Where he's gone and how he fares, nobody knows and nobody cares. And I will dance to Tom Paine's bones. Dance to Tom Paine's bones. Dance to the oldest boots I own to the rhythm of Tom Paine's bones. I will dance to Tom Paine's bones. Dance to Tom Paine's bones. Dance in the oldest boots I own to the rhythm of Tom Paine's bones. I will dance to Tom Paine's bones.
And that, of course, was Tom Paine's Bones from Roy Bailey's Coda. You're tuned to Free Radio, as mentioned before, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. I'm Robert Norse, and the name of my show is, of course, Bathrobes Pierre's Broadsides. I'll be with you until 8. Call-in number here is 427-3772, or alternately 469-3119, 427-3772, and 469-3119. So give a call, and you can chat on issues of the day. I understand yesterday the drum circle was again driven away by the proximity of a police car enforcing a ban on public assembly in the public parking lot. Parking lot number 4 next to the farmer's market. Rather serious stuff. You can read more about this on the Santa Cruz Indie Media website, www.indiebay.org/Santa Cruz. And not good. We had hoped that the police and the city had understood that this is a traditional gathering place. There's no crime wave or crime problem that's existent or even vaguely documented at this address, and it's obviously sort of part of the culture war that some merchants and some bureaucrats and some city council members want to wage in the city to clean up the downtown. I suspect it's kind of an element of the scapegoating that's going on during the recession, where people who are counterculture and poor and homeless are being blamed for the city's economic problems. In any case, it's something that has to be contested by those of us who want to keep spaces public, just the way the national repression. The national war and repression has to be contested. Obama may be closing Guantanamo, but there's CIA torture camps throughout the world open. The army is increasing in numbers. We have the same military regime running with Gates as we had before. It's a struggle that you can't really back away from if you want to see it changed. That's always the problem we have. You may have some different ideas on that. I'm going to turn for the moment, to some street interviews. Before I do, however, I want to draw your attention to something that's happening tonight. I found this out by actually word of mouth, and then I checked the Santa Cruz Metro. And what I found was there's a lecture tonight at the Rio Theater. At 8 p.m., there's an evening discussion on medical cannabis. That's 2 hours down the road. And it goes from 8 to 10. And the speaker is Dr. Deborah Malka, M.D., Ph.D., sponsored by Greenway Compassionate Relief and Marijuana Profiteering, I might add, and the Food Bin Herb Room. They're proudly presenting an evening discussion on medical cannabis. I add that little addition because I'm increasingly disillusioned with Lisa Mulineaux, the co-owner, if not the owner, of Greenway. She's broken her word to me several times about being available for a public discussion. She ran for city council, and then I think she showed up at one forum, maybe two. She just doesn't return calls. And there's been a lot of complaints about the quality of the marijuana she sells, the way the people are treated there, and the costs of the marijuana. So, I'd like to get some responses from her or her staff, but I'm not. And that being the case, I'm grumpy in the extreme. On the other hand, if she is sponsoring a free evening with Deborah Malka, it might be worth checking out from 8 to 10. If anybody does check it out, I do encourage you to make a tape of it, an audio tape. And since it's a public event, it certainly can be replayed on free radio for those who are unable to attend it or hadn't heard about it. And since it wasn't, I just heard about it this afternoon and put it up a few hours ago. I don't know how many people have actually been there and seen it. I have in the studio with me previous programmer, Coral. Are you Coral or are you something else, Coral, for the purposes of this? I don't know. For this, you're cruel? You're Cruella? Okay. I know, Cruella, that we've had you on tape talking about your adventures with the police on the sidewalk, trying to serve free food and play music in front of New Leaf. And I know that you're going to be involved with me and a couple of other folks doing a kind of a cop watch and sleep out on Human Rights Day, the 60th anniversary of the UN Declaration of Human Rights. It's coming up day after tomorrow, Saturday, at Borders Bookshop. Actually, we're not going to be inside Borders. We'll be right outside Borders, inviting people to share some hot soup and to keep an eye on the police department downtown, which over this Thanksgiving/Christmas season seems to be taking an especial interest in giving out additional tickets. So I know you reported and we played your discussion of how you were kind of given the third degree or, given close observation by two or three police officers one Thursday evening, simply because you were giving out food. They accused you of littering. They wanted to know who you were. They wanted to see an ID. They told you couldn't go. Are you always this much of a food criminal, or is this just a sort of a problem you had that Thursday that turned you into a food criminal?
I never liked to cook when I was a kid.
There you go. I mean, it's probably compensating,
So it's my punishment, I'm sure.
I wonder, say something else. Are we getting a real mic reading from you?
Well, these mics,
yes.
They're
working. Okay, cool. So again, I think that one of the reasons we're going to be doing this protest on UN Day is one of the rights of the UN Declaration of Human Rights, I think, has to do with nourishment and the right to have some kind of access to food. The Santa Cruz HUF organization, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, and the Human Rights Organization has been concerned a lot with other rights, like the right to be able to sleep at night legally, not anywhere and everywhere, but somewhere. The UN Declaration goes further. It talks about affordable housing for everyone. But Santa Cruz has been a big on long on talk and short on action on really affordable housing, not in the sense that it hasn't provided some low-income housing, but in the sense that for those who don't have it, they face tickets, 60 to 90 tickets a month, $97 a shot if you're sleeping outside. And that's with no alternatives. So it's not like they say, here, you get to go there, and you say, no, I won't. I want to sleep here on the street corner. Well, you know, that's another matter. There is a civil liberties issue there, too. I don't deny it. But it's not that at all. It's that there is no place to go, and people are getting ticketed in places where they're gathering for shelter and safety, like the Greek Orthodox Church, where they have been sleeping outside across from a library. At least I've gotten several reports of that. In fact, I'm about to play one. I think this is happening. I think this is on this tape. Let's see if it is.
Well, I'm downtown here in front of New Leaf Market. It's about 9:10 in Drumland. Suzanne and other drummers are out drumming in front of a Maryland's Alfresco's Cafe. And, TP, I regret to tell you that your last dialogue with me, for some peculiar reason, just did not get recorded. So perhaps I can get you to reiterate the highlights of your interaction.
My witnessing of just ridiculous citations written by the local constables today for a bubblegum wrapper being thrown on the street, somebody spitting on the sidewalk in the rain, by the way. It was raining today. It didn't seem like that major of an infraction. Riding a bicycle the wrong way down the street, that one seemed a bit illegal, but it was raining. The person was probably trying to get out of the rain, something important like that. Just general overall harassment, bragging by the police on how many tickets they wrote in an hour. Apparently 9 citations were written in 1 hour by one officer. He seemed very proud of himself for that.
And you also said you saw some higher-ups discussing budget cuts?
Yeah, I saw a couple sergeants and another officer discussing which one was about to lose their job. I thought that was kind of interesting. They seemed genuinely worried that one of them wouldn't be employed by the end of the year.
Thank you, J.P. Freeman.
You're welcome.
We're 400.
So it's
Thanksgiving.
It's about 2:20. I'm out here on Pacific Avenue.
On Sunday.
In front of in front of Borders, and Black Rose is here drawing her first albatross. She has an abalone shell with some money and a nutty chocolate bar in it. Donations appreciated. And she's drawing on top of her guitar case.
5 CDs yesterday.
And she is take her into custody. She's is about to present us with a CD, perhaps.
I don't have any more.
Typical.
Right now, but
typical.
I will tomorrow. Tomorrow. I got a job too.
Where?
For this gentleman who works for a wood company, wood finishing company. He needs odds and ends done. So his name is John Nanziato, and he came up to me today and saw that me carrying my stuff, and he was like, do you need food or something to eat or anything? And I said, no, you know, and then I don't know how we got to the job subject, but he was like, I can give you a job for $10 an hour under the table. Under the table!
Under the table.
I know, you're not supposed to say anything.
You're blessed. You're blessed. Don't throw your blessing away.
Now, what about getting back to this stupid court date, it's the 18th of November?
Yeah.
Or December?
Yeah, December.
And this is actually your trial for resisting arrest?
Yep.
For singing after sunset?
Yes. And just not being detained peaceably.
And you were being forcefully and violently detained, so you were naturally accused of resisting arrest.
Right.
And you're looking for witnesses for this event, which occurred. What's the date of the actual incident?
October 26th.
So anybody was around October 26th at the corner of Soquel and Pacific near Borders.
Corner of Borders. I'm black. I have blonde dreadlocks. I was screaming my ass off. They ended up getting 6 squad cars down here, 3 police officers to detain me. I got scratched up. And it's all for being homeless.
Have you had any other encounters since then regarding...
Yeah, I've gotten about 4 or 5 other tickets since then.
For?
Panhandling after dark, which I was still singing, so it's not panhandling. Let's see, what else?
You don't know who gave you that ticket, do you?
No, but I got cited personally by the owner of Borders, the woman that owns this building and this block. She did a citizen cite to me.
For?
Weeks later for unnecessary noise.
That ordinance, as I pointed out in past...
And the actual wording is unreasonable noise. It's not unnecessary noise. Nothing is necessary, I suppose, except breathing, you know, and eating, but... all kinds of free speech activity may be unnecessary, but it's questions whether it's unreasonable. And again, for those of you who have forgotten, the definition of unreasonable noise during the daytime and actually up to 10 p.m. at night is pretty interesting. It is sounds which are unreasonably disturbing or physically annoying to people of ordinary sensitiveness, or which are so harsh or so prolonged or unnatural or unusual in their use, time, or place as to cause physical discomfort to any person, and which are not necessary in connection with an activity which is otherwise lawfully conducted. So jackhammering may cause the fillings in your teeth to scream at you, but since it is conducted with a lawful purpose, with a lawful activity, you can't complain, even though it obviously is unreasonable noise in a certain sense. Or it's certainly disturbing noise. So the idea that a singer after dark before 10 o'clock is unreasonable noise is generally hogwash. And the police, of course, are passing on people's complaints about they don't like the way that they don't like singing after dark before 10 o'clock under this law, which is simply not applicable. And it's another example of deceptive or ignorant behavior by the police department, a kind of a bigoted bias on behalf of merchants, residents, or owners. I don't know who this woman is above borders who was harassing Black Rose. And I suspect it may have been the same woman who was harassing the food servers with Santa Cruz Revival that were serving food and then singing religious songs 2 weeks ago and then 3 weeks ago. And they got tickets 3 weeks ago, and 2 weeks ago they were again harassed by the police. And we'll be hearing, I think, some information about that today in some of these interviews.
Is requires a very, very loud amount of noise, and it also requires it be done between at night, or you have to show that it's not being done in connection with a legal activity. And you were, in fact, doing something. You were singing, which I presume was legal at the time, right?
Right.
This guy bothering you?
No.
And
also, a friend of mine suggested that I cite the lady that owns the building in response.
Yeah.
I don't like to. I'm not a fighter. I mean, I am internally, but I don't. I think this is all stupid, and I think it's a waste of time, and I think it's a waste of money, whoever's paying for it. And
do you have the woman's name on the ticket?
Nope, didn't get her name. Whoever owns this building, the police officer came, gave me a ticket and two other people.
Well, if it's a citizen's arrest, her name has to be on the ticket.
Yeah. Well, nope. Her name isn't on.
Interesting. Then if the officer's doing it, then the police department is culpable.
Specifically, that the ticket was coming from her.
Ticket can't come from her. It has to come from him, or it has to.
Doing people citations now. People can cite. You can.
Well,
cite.
You can always do that, but the person has to give their name on the ticket.
Oh, well, yeah, they should, but her name's not on there.
Well, what you want to do is you want to talk to your attorney about it and have that, I mean, even though your attorney.
Did I tell you the week after my arrest, in the same spot, another police officer came up to me and started to shut me down for the same thing, and this police officer actually took the time to read the ordinance that I had in my hand. I said, can I show you this?
Actually, you don't have the ordinance. You have the description of the ordinance as put out by the host.
The host of downtown Santa Cruz have passed me this as soon as I got here, but they work for the government in this town.
Right.
And it clearly says here that you can perform between 8 a.m. and 10 p.m. and you can accept tips using a display device. As long as you stay in the spot for 1 hour. None of those laws I was breaking. So this next police officer takes this out of my hand after he writes me a ticket and goes, you know what, I'm going to write this one off. You're absolutely right for the same thing. So I shouldn't have been arrested and all that stuff the week before. However, I had the warrant in Venice, but still, again, those warrants were for sleeping on the beach. You know?
They didn't ship you down Venice.
And you shouldn't have been arrested unless they intended to take you in on the warrants, which I doubt they did.
I asked, no, they gave me a date for down there, but I also told them that day I do not have the money to get down there.
And this is, of course, Black Rose, also known as Rebecca, who is quite a vivacious and talented person. I haven't heard her singing. I don't know why the police thought that singing after sunset was illegal, though they have said that's the case. However, we do have a phone comment from a caller. Hi there, caller. Are
you there? Hi there, Robert. Thank you for taking the call.
Hey, no problem. What's your first name?
My first name is Rich.
Hey, Rich. You've turned down your radio?
I have.
Excellent. Go ahead. So what's your reaction to this, or what's on your mind?
Well, my comment has to do with the police contacts. I study criminal law, and I'm a legal researcher and a consultant. And it strikes me that some of the comments that the lady is making in reference to the contacts being made by either the store owner or the police, let's just focus on the police for a moment. When the police officer makes contact with anybody and that anybody believes that they're not free to leave, that officer has in fact initiated a detention. That's one of the primary legal terms used. And when the officer issues a notice to appear, what's commonly known as a citation, it's in fact converted, it's escalated, in other words. And one of the things that struck me particularly was the panhandling allegation.
Was what allegation?
The panhandling allegation.
Uh-huh.
That's in fact what the city likes to use to convert protected speech into a statutorily regulated and municipally controlled privilege. Now, everybody has the right to ask questions. For example, do you have a quarter? That's federally protected speech. You have the right to say, I don't have a quarter. You have the right to say, buzz off, leave me alone. However, the mere question, the posing of a question, is in that particular framework, is falls within a protected speech category. So I think that the people of Santa Cruz who are being subjected to this type of police behavior would have a greater effect on them if they were aware of the distinction between a government-granted privilege and federally protected speech.
Sure. It sounds like we're talking about the difference between a right and a privilege. And,
exactly.
You know, the problem here, of course, is that since the 1993 roulette decision, or 94, I don't know whether the Supreme Court or it was maybe a Ninth Circuit decision, which involved Seattle's panhandling law and Seattle's sitting ordinances. I'm working from memory here, so I may be a little bit off, but my understanding is, though there was an earlier decision that called the Blair decision that said you can't ban panhandling for sure, what they did was they said, oh, yes, but you can regulate it because asking for things of value is different than ordinary speech. Similar to maybe the claim that, you know, commercial speech has some difference from ordinary speech, so that, you know, you have a right to ban cigarette ads inside pharmacies. That's what San Francisco recently did as a city. I have a certain sympathy for restricting or regulating, even penalizing abusive panhandling where you're threatening people, although that's not really panhandling. That sounds more like assault, you know. But even a lesser standard for that. But what's happened in Santa Cruz is it's become illegal to panhandle in 90% of the city during the winter about, 65 to 70% of the time, because you're not allowed to ask for anything of value after dark or hold up a sign asking for anything of value after dark. I guess if you're a charity, you can do it, you know, the police are not going to go after you. But if you're an individual seeking to sustain your life or get a beer for that matter, it's suddenly criminal behavior.
Well, that's the crux of the issue right there. The in order for it to rise to the level of criminal behavior, the peace officer needs to comply with certain rules. Now, the peace officer, police officer, synonymous term, will swear an oath prior to assuming his office. And presumably, they're going to be enforcing local ordinances. Local ordinances have to be in compliance with general law. The municipality can't initiate and pass into law. They can't general law is the bottom line. They can't do that. So the officer needs to comply with legislative authorization when they make contact for the purpose of applying the state police power. And that's in fact what's happening. Now, with regards to the issue of panhandling, somebody walking up to me as I walk down Pacific Avenue and asked me for a dollar and a half for a bottle of beer is well within their right to do so. I also have the right to refuse to participate in the conversation. Now, how does it rise to the level of a crime? Well, first of all, if the DA wants to go ahead and prosecute this, or the city attorney wants to prosecute this as a crime, we all know that intent is a component of crime. So there's a component of crime called mens rea, a mental state. Did you intend to inflict harm on somebody? That's what the city attorney or the DA would have to prove in a court case. Now, the majority of everything that's being discussed tonight falls into an infraction category. And in an infraction category, the people who are going to be subjected to this police contact, if they choose to have their day in court, are not going to have a jury trial. It's just going to be the cop, more than likely, and them. And the cop will more than likely tell their story, and then the defendant will have an opportunity to tell her story. There's a big problem with this because there's no jury trial. City attorney is more than likely not going to be involved, and if the commissioner finds for the people, more than likely the party cited will be subjected to a civil forfeiture, a fine. So there's all kinds of issues with regards to that. However, if it's possible for us to think in terms of government-granted privilege speak and secured right speak, then I think when it comes to defending ourselves, if we decide to have our day in court, we'll have a greater effect. I have the right to ask you for a bottle of beer. I have the right to ask you for a job. I have the right to ask you for a shoelace. You have the right to refuse to speak with me.
You know, all these are common sense understandings, although some people would say, do I have the right to ask you to come with me to help commit a murder? Do I have the right to ask you if you want to buy some child pornography from me? Do I have the right to... In other words...
Well, yes. The answer is yes. You have the right to ask, but conspiracy to commit a crime is a different issue. Someone soliciting an opinion or a response is one thing. The context has a lot to do with it.
Well, remember, what the distinction that apparently the Ninth Circuit or the Supreme Court made in the Roulette case, as I understand it, again, not before me, I should probably look at it online, is that something was being sought of value, something almost kind of a quasi-commercial request was being made. It wasn't in the nature of a discussion of political opinions or an exchange of views. It was more in the nature of got a quarter, you know, meaning, you know, I want something of value from you and I'm asking for it. So, you know, it's frankly, the issue has never been carried to a higher court from Santa Cruz, from the panhandling law, except on one occasion when a man had a sign that said, fuck the pigs, in his hat because the police had been harassing him. And the police arrested him for panhandling with an obscene language sign, and that was found to be a violation of free speech. which is the only time this any part of this law has ever actually taken a constitutional challenge, and that was a settlement was made and the law was changed. That was like 2 or 3 years ago. So that may just happen. I'd like to play more of it, though. Is there anything you want to conclude with, Richard, on this?
Well, I just thought I'd throw that out for general discussion, and you know, we'll see where the chips fall. I think that the protected speech argument is very important. You raised a really important point there, Robert, with regards to the difference between commercial and non-commercial speech. Again, an allegation and a conviction are two different things. In order for the city to achieve a conviction, they have to prove elements.
Yeah, but see, the problem is, Rich, that we don't have people. We're talking about people who don't have a lot of legal training. We're talking about an ACLU that has no interest in local ordinances. We're talking about a city that is largely compliant with the wishes of its police force, regardless of how they may be trotting on our basic civil rights, admittedly perhaps with good objectives in their own minds, but doing so nonetheless. So the real issue is how do I communicate to ordinary people on the street how they can address this? And usually people just want to get the fuck away from the cop and not carry this stuff through. You and I have talked before, and you're a man who takes his law seriously and takes his rights seriously and devotes, I would say, dozens of hours a week on these issues. Wouldn't you agree?
Dozens multiplied by dozens. Yeah, I would agree. And I like yourself, I have an interest in being able to distill it that, you know, a six-year-old can comprehend this stuff. Law isn't really quite the mystery a lot of people make it out to be. And you don't have to, I'm not an attorney. I don't want to be an attorney. I simply want to know what attorneys know. I can ask questions. I can make statements. And based on my understanding, reviewing the rules, number one, finding out who they apply to, you don't have to be an attorney to represent yourself reasonably well for virtually any allegation.
This is true. The problem, though, is that we're talking about people. Most people who suffer from this panhandling law are those who are homeless. They have no place to go to usually except what they make up, you know, for that particular night. They don't have access to the law library except during the day, and they have to carry their office around with them. Their computer access is highly limited. So it is a problem. Let me leave it there for the moment, encourage you to keep listening and play some more from the streets. If you have any more thoughts, feel free to call in again.
Thank you, Robert. Keep up the good work, and bravo.
Hey, thank you for calling in, man.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
And phone lines are open, 427-3772. Here's a little more from the discussion I believe it was, were we on Black Road?
The reason why I came up to Venice,
right.
I mean came here from Venice, is to get away from all the junk that was going on down there and to start all over and to pick my life up. And all you're doing is piling me with more charges, more court dates that are going to interfere with if I do get a job.
Hey!
How are you?
Hey, Mickey! Come here. I want to
We've been talking with Black Rose, who's, again, putting the finishing touches on her first ever albatross drawing.
Isn't it phenomenal?
Yes.
Thanks, Black Rose.
Yeah, all right, Robert.
All right, we're talking with...
With Leaf.
You are a local...
Street person.
Meaning you are homeless, or...
Homeless, yes. Houseless.
How long you been in town?
About 2 months.
Okay. Looking for work?
At the moment, no.
Now, what tale do you have to tell us?
I've been sick, say, for about a month now. And I've been, you know, last weekend I was actually starting to get better before the weekend came on. And that Saturday night I decided to have a few drinks. So I was like, I had a few beers. And I was sitting out on the sidewalk and I was sick. I started feeling sick in my stomach, so I threw up, which is part of the complication for me being sick. I've been throwing up for a couple of weeks off and on. And
this didn't please the merchants nearby.
Well, at the same moment the cops came up, and
You admit that they made you sick to your stomach.
Yeah, but they arrested me for drunk in public, you know, so because of that. And I tried to explain to them that I'm sick, and they're like, oh, yeah, whatever. And I even went as far as to tell the sergeant, I can't remember his name, that I don't really like him very well. And he remembered that because he brought that up. But my point is that when you're homeless and you have basically your home on your back, they take your stuff and then they take it to the police station. And they let me out about 3 in the morning on Saturday night, and I'm sick with nothing to keep me warm. So basically they had all my stuff and I couldn't get it till Monday, which as a result, I ended up having to go to the hospital this past week because I'm suffering from bronchitis. You know, being out in the cold like that, having nothing to keep me warm. And I just wanted to bring that up, that I think it's like completely wrong that they're allowed to steal your things, you know, to a certain point instead of giving them back to you, you know.
It's actually standard for them to check your stuff in with you into jail when it gets checked out. I don't know why, other than harassment, they would take it to the police station. It creates more problems for them, more problems for you.
Yes.
When you pick up your property, they're only, what, there's a half-hour period each day or 2 half-hour periods.
Well, there's an hour period and then another half-hour period.
One is, what, around noon, and the other is the end of the day?
Noon, and one's around 4:15 to 4:45, I think it is. But
so it's difficult to arrange your schedule to pick that stuff up, particularly since that also interferes with eating and the meals, the free meals.
Yep. And also, like, I mean, just the point that you can't get it back till Monday, and they let you out in the middle of the night, you know, on a Saturday, and it's cold outside.
Well, it's called the homeless elimination program. It's a way of, shall we say, decreasing the surplus population of the mall.
Yeah.
You understand? It's being done for your own good and for the good of the society around you.
Now, if it was anybody else, you know, on the street, and they, you know, that happened, I don't think they would even taken that person in. You know what I mean? Because I watch it constantly. Yes, I drink a little bit and I get drunk. You know, of course, yeah. But
were you drunk that day?
I was a little bit, not really. You know,
were you so drunk you couldn't take care of yourself?
No, I wasn't.
That's the standard.
Okay. But
was there an open container nearby?
No, there wasn't. I didn't have.
Do you have any warrants outstanding that day?
Nope.
Well, it sounds like the police, again, are using illegally expanding their powers in order to eliminate people downtown and to crack down, as they put it, on the visible homeless population.
Yeah, I think that's what it is. And, you know, of course, they want us out of here. So, you know, what else is there to say? That's about all I have to say. Thank you.
Talking with?
Leaf.
Thanks, Leaf.
And those were recent street interviews, probably in the last few days. We got more of them, too. I'm going to play a few more now. Here's a little something from Thanksgiving, about a week ago, actually, or exactly a week ago.
A man pointing to somebody else. Any comments for free radio?
Yeah, I was just seeing how everything
on having a free radio station in Santa Cruz,
yeah.
I think
that
all the brothers and sisters who truly believe that it's a country for the people and of the people and by the people should have a people's radio station, which is supported by the people for all the people that represent.
It's a free radio station. Any reports from the street? Do you recommend anything to say that you've seen that you want to let us know about? Any news accounts?
What's that?
Jen, I'm really glad I'm here and I see that so many people are still alive that I remember from 5 years ago.
All right, man.
And this is in line at the very long line at the Veterans Hall meal that began as early as 11 or even earlier and went on till 3, 3:30. Apparently everybody got served food, although there were some untoward incidents at the end, I heard, which had to do with, a staff member getting upset at the way home, that people who are still hungry and hadn't eaten were diving into the food that was left. He apparently picked up the food and threw it all in the dumpster because he found it was inappropriate the way people were grabbing at the food or maybe picking it up with their hands or something unsanitary, so better to just throw it all away. strange approach, in my view, for dealing with hungry people. But, again, this is a secondhand report, so I don't really have the exact details. But this, again, these interviews are happening in line and in front of the Veterans Hall. Twice a year, there's a really sumptuous meal that happens, or certainly a very hearty meal that happens in the Veterans Hall at Christmas and Thanksgiving.
And we have a lot to be grateful and thankful for.
You look happy.
Thank you very
much. What is your name, Mr. Grateful Man?
They call me Mark. In the society we live in, and Eon on the street. See you later.
Hey, Eon. Thank you. So it's a long line here right before the line starts to move at the Veterans Memorial Hall, where folks are waiting to get something to eat. Some are playing a little strumming here.
And I hear that lonesome whistle blow my blues.
And the weather is sunny. Hey. And it's the Human Rights Table is set up with Bob Patton and Bernard Kushner and the sleeping van. I'm here at the, still a very long line here at the Vets Hall's Thanksgiving Gobble Gobble Day feed. And we're talking with
Jodel Fumatai.
And you are, of course, a survivor of El Rio.
Yes, I'm a survivor. I'm in the foxhole, really, right now. And we're getting ready for our second wave of information to come out about what's going on.
This is the only owner-owned mobile home park in Santa Cruz.
That's what they tell us, but really what's happening is we have this management Goliath we've been fighting, you know, with our little sticks. But they might be leaving, but there is, I want to talk about a few things about that. One of the issues is this management company is like all over the state, and what I'm seeing is
the name of the company.
Well, should I say the name of the company?
Public, right?
Okay, it's John Stewart Company, and one of their managers. What would you say? He basically violated my persons physically in a.
He bothered you. He sexually harassed you.
Yes, he did. He
messed with you.
Yes, he did.
Or did he just bump into you? What's the truth?
Both. He bumped into me with a major hard-on, pushed me back for about, what was it?
I haven't had one of those in quite a while. That's another matter.
In front of my partner and my other housemate, who were both in shock. It's all actually on 911. My partner was calling the police, actually telling them exactly what he was doing, and he didn't stop.
Now, is this having to do with some political work you were doing? Was he just horny, or was he mad at you for some reason?
He was mad at me because I was basically telling him that I wasn't going to allow my housemate to be treated in a disrespectful way because he was a senior citizen and disabled.
Do you know the housemate involved here?
Well, we do. I don't know if he wants to say anything. We don't have to.
Hello. My name's Lloyd.
Oh, there he is.
As a long-term activist. The two of you actually do a community TV show.
Yeah, well, we do a community TV. You can find us Tuesdays, 7 o'clock, but I'll let you figure that out.
Channel
27.
27. Now, is there anything coming up on this issue of the, should we say, mismanagement and personal abuse at El Rio that people can get information on the Internet or any upcoming programs or any place they can access more info about this?
Well, we ourselves are keeping this private right now because we're working on a little bit of legal issues. But the issue is here is what the warning is I want to warn people that the management companies who are managing low-income housing really have a potential to abuse people and get away with it because of their lawyer situation. They have a mountain of lawyers.
So those are the barriers you face.
Exactly. That's what it is.
So you're saying this is private. Does this mean you don't want this broadcast, or you do want this broadcast?
Well, what we wanted, I don't want anything legal broadcast. What I want to do is start getting, we have some projects we want to work on too, but we're not yet ready to talk about those.
You know what you've been saying. Do you want to, you know, going out over the air, because it's likely to happen on Sunday, because this is part of a long tape, which I just play usually.
Yeah, it sounds like the tape recorder needs a real boost. So let's bring in its younger brother and see where we're at.
Oh, really? Okay. Well, the real part is I really want people to start doing some research about their management companies if they're having problems.
Okay.
Because the management companies can get away with murder, and I do mean murder.
Has anybody been killed at El Rio?
Well, one woman committed suicide. I mean, it's a rumor, but down in San Diego, John Stewart Company took over a housing cooperative for elderly people, and people started committing suicide because they were so violated and terrorized.
I hear you. Well, what can people do to assist you in your quest to, we say, improve conditions at El Rio and make John Stewart more accountable?
I think they should start looking at who John Stewart's doing business with in town, because I'm at this point we're taking care of it in El Rio, but the point is one of these managers is going to be working at the tannery. I mean, he's like going to be possibly in political operations and construction of the tannery, and I think this is a problem. People are looking at the tannery as a wonderful place to live, but you have an abusive person who has abused power. I think people should start looking at how to talk about their management companies with each other.
Is there a place where people can call a number to get more information or get some solidarity or get some useful advice here?
Well, Robert, I don't actually know, because you're the one that I would talk to if I was going to ask something like that.
Let's ask this silver-haired man who is currently standing next to you and is also from El Rio, what he has to say.
Yeah.
What's your name, sir?
My name's Lloyd, and if you'd like to call me up, if you'd like to talk about the John Stewart Company running the tannery the way they did the El Rio by saying that the civil code doesn't apply, they don't have to follow the rules. Well,
anyway, they can talk to you about these issues regarding their own rental situations or RV, mobile home situations or problems with those kinds of groups?
Yeah, it's typical. Take, for instance, Mark Hafman's experience at the El Rio. He had to sue them in court for his deposit. And the judge just, there was no complaint. Of course the judge gave it to him right away. It was very clear that the John Stewart management was depriving him of his deposit without any grounds at all. And he had to go to court for that. Is that the way they're going to treat the people who live at the tannery?
Unless they get together, I would suspect probably so. Or why not? I mean, if you can get away with it, get away with it. But here's a man who might give us some insight. What's your opinion, sir?
Oh, the whole thing is the biggest nonsensical boondoggle that the city's ever got involved in.
What are you referring to, sir? What is your name?
I thought you were talking about the tannery so-called artist space project, which is actually a low-income housing project.
Tell me about that.
What do you mean, tell you about it? I thought you were at all the city council meetings, Robert.
I've been avoiding those council meetings.
Don't you pay attention while you're every...
He so outshines me that I feel belittled when I'm in his presence.
No, but the thing is, got this company from, I think it was Minnesota somewhere, that came in to build this place, and originally the owners of the tannery were going to have to put up a $5 million bond to make sure the place was cleaned, and all the pollution was cleaned up, and then there was money left over in case anyone ever had any health problems that was living there. And then all of a sudden, the city found some state agency which would clean it up for free. They took the, because the state then was involved, all of a sudden the state's on the hook in case somebody gets sick. And the owners of the tannery jacked the price up. Not only did they not have to pay the extra $5 million out of what they were going to get to begin with as the price of the property, but they also said, well, property values have gone up, so we deserve $3 million extra. And so this whole thing was just a big boon to the former tannery owners who are friends with all the city council members.
And who are those tannery owners?
I can't remember the name of that family right
Very
now.
Very convenient. Perhaps the Sentinel photographer could give us some more. Who owned the tannery, do you know?
Actually, it was the Lezin family.
Ellie, how do you spell it?
L-E-Z-I-N.
Thank you. Appreciate that. So you see, you get information from the strangest sources.
Yes.
Thank you all very much. And again, if you have questions, you can give a call around these issues about, I don't know about, I'm sure you know about the tannery, you probably know something about it, but certainly about the, El Rio, to Dr. Lloyd at
457-2406.
Thank you, Lloyd. Thank you.
Joe Dell.
And thank you. Whoever. Neptune, as he sometimes knows.
We have that teller of tall tales, Uncle Hutch. Hutch, what have you got to tell us? I don't want any tall tales.
Yesterday I was in San Rafael Park, and I saw my friend Bear laying under a tree.
Yes.
So I went over and I was talking to Bear, and two cops came by and gave us a ticket for standing and laying under the tree.
Do you have the ticket with you?
No, I don't, but I will...
Do you remember what time of day this was?
Yes, it was like... It was about... 10:30 in the morning.
Remember who the police were?
It wasn't Sylvia Wallace. I'll find out. I got the tickets. I'll find out.
You get all the details,
well,
Mister.
Honey, it was sorted.
You know, if you're homeless, you're not supposed to loiter in the parks, on the streets, on the sidewalks, or anywhere. Okay? Keep that in mind.
I know. I got a ticket at Trader Joe's the other day. I went in to buy some groceries for trespassing. They said, "Don't come back," and they beat me up.
I remember.
Having a little trouble with the tape recorder here. I'm going to be. Again, switching to another one and saying if perhaps I can do a little better. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. This is called Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides, and the call-in number is 427-3772. These are interviews in line at the Thanksgiving meal from poor folks, homeless folks, and other folks who are there helping out.
Pay my rent in person. I wasn't allowed to say praise the Lord.
We do have a phone caller. Go ahead, caller.
Hello.
Hello.
Robert, it's Madison. So I want to address two things. One is South Tannery, and two is the protest that's going to happen Saturday down at Beach Flats Community Center. All the moms need to get together and people and go down and talk to to state their Parks and Recreation disgruntled customer service ideas, because the City Council and Danette Shoemaker think that they can close the Beach Flats Community Center, where we have the most crime. And the more Parks and Rec you have, I said this earlier, the less crime you have. And I did a quick 5-minute analysis of their guide that we have for the city of Santa Cruz, which is 60,000 people but serves at least 150,000 in the whole region, versus the top-run city where I got the award and I managed the guide and a few other miscellaneous art and museums. In the Best Run City in the Nation award, and we've got several of them, Danette Shoemaker is only working at a third of what the values that we're paying her, 90,000 times two, for because she's benefits, so you bill her, you break her in at 180,000 to cover her costs.
Danette Shoemaker is the head of Parks and Rec, but let me ask you, Madison.
Yeah, and I believe she's been promoted from within.
Let me ask you. When is this protest at the Beach Flats? Do you know when and where it's happening?
I think it's midday, but the Control Machete, they're kind of organizing it. Some of the Brown Berets probably, they hang out with them. But
because it doesn't do any good for people to think there's a protest sometime during the day.
I know. I tried to call Beach Flats, but I think the woman who ran it got laid off already.
Well,
but I really honestly feel that we need a new city manager, we need a new city attorney, and we need a new Parks and Recreation director. We need all new city heads, because every 5 years you have a turnover. And this woman, I've been checking the Loudoun Nelson Center, nothing is booked over there. The classrooms are empty. They are empty, and I've been going morning, noon, and night. And
although there will be a complete booking on Saturday for the Human Rights Fair, the same day that you say that there is a protest at the Beach Flats, which may well be happening. You know what you can do, Madison, is you can find out when and where this is, and then just leave a PSA, a call-free radio, and then give a PSA to whoever's
the air. Well, let me finish. The calculation, I did one quick calculations on the loss for Loudoun Nelson. The loss, Danette is costing us at Loudoun Nelson $250,000. So we've lost $250,000, and we've lost her salary and her benefits, so that's almost $500,000 lost. So at that point, it was like, we don't have time. Next, find someone else. And she's been promoted from within, which is a really nice thing.
Yeah,
I don't
disagree with you in terms of my criticism, similarly, of these public officials, but
our activity guide looks like Galt 1970. It should look like we're...
You also were going to say something about the tannery, I think.
Oh, the tannery. Okay, anybody who has issues with what's the other gentleman's name who was speaking? I wrote down his phone number. It was...
Lloyd.
457-2406.
Probably.
Well, there is a complaint at the grand jury regarding the discrimination of the... they're getting money from HUD, so... HUD has a complaint with the Attorney General, Mukasey, who just had a heart attack, but you can submit a complaint to them regarding HUD discrimination, and the HUD money is also discriminating, I believe, because the program requires people to have perfect credit and $40. And a lot of people that are homeless and would be using this program don't have the $40. And they don't have perfect credit, so anybody who doesn't have that is being discriminated against. So we have a complaint at the grand jury. They may be trying to protect Stewart, but if you send more complaints to 401 Ocean, grand jury 401 Ocean at Attention South Tannery Discrimination, then we can probably get the homeless in there, because right now it won't happen. Mm-hmm. And I'm really disappointed to hear that the John Stewart Company is having suicides in San Diego, and I believe that people are being targeted in the state of California by low frequency and neuro-linguistical programming, and that these seniors might be targeted, and vets are being targeted, and artists are being targeted.
That seems to be
people.
That's another issue, which frankly sounds,
I know it is,
sounds,
but it,
it sounds
it, seems
it
so
sounds
far,
wing nutty to me. And
yeah,
until
a
until
group
I
of seniors
hang
to be
on, Madison,
suicide,
Madison, Madison,
do that.
Until I get specific, you know. You show me the apparatus, you bring it
right,
in, we'll talk about
it.
You know, otherwise, it just...
There's
it just
already, anybody who's having these issues, there's already complaints down there. But the
it tends to discredit what you're...
Are the least
Madison,
likely...
Madison, it tends to discredit the rest of what you're saying, and that's my concern,
no,
because
it doesn't,
I would
no,
like...
Because,
I would
no,
like,
I evidence already.
I would like, I've turned down your mic for a moment. I would like, you know, because it sounds like you got some useful information about the tannery and about the beach flats, you know, and you're welcome to talk about neuro-linguistic programming, you know, drug agents and everything else. But as I've told you before, I want documentation before we have any more serious discussion. And I think you discredit yourself without the documentation.
No, Robert, there have been a number of people who were laid off for laundering in the city of Santa Cruz, and they need to stay on it.
Anyway,
we're not paying taxes to have these people suck it up. Thank you, and have a nice day.
Sure, you too, and thanks for calling in. Phone lines are open, 427-3772. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz's Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides. I'm Robert, and you're whoever you are, and you can call in and chat on the air. Let's get back to some of these interviews. My apologies for the questionable quality of the tape recording. It sounds like the batteries died early on when the tapes were made, so I have to kind of adjust and try to bear with these recordings, because I think some of the information that's here is, well, I want these voices to be heard. So here we go. Free radio. Okay, well, thanks. Yeah, it looks like what we have here, my apologies for interference with the tape and the low tape volume and the fact that you can sometimes hear me babbling away. I think when these tapes were made, we really had a bad recorder, and so you originally get a high tone that kind of goes off into the distance. So I'm going to work on that, see if anything is actually salvageable, although I guess some of it is for the sharper-eared listeners. Let's go back to some more recent interviews, and these, I think, are actually on a more audible tape. You, of course, will be audible if you call in at 427-3772. And I'm interested, you know, if you've had bad experiences with John Stewart, if you have concerns about the tannery, concerns about mobile home park, rent problems with the landlord, harassment at the Palomar, harassment on the streets, you name it. I'd like to know the specifics of what went down and how you're dealing with it and whether that other people have had these experiences. And that's what we need to know to get together to figure out what to do next. We have a caller. Hey there, caller. You're on Free Radio.
Oh, hi. Yeah, I'd rather not give my name. The other day, I think it said on your radio program that you had interviewed somebody from Alaska about involuntary medication of people.
You know, we were trying to. That was Jim Gottstein, but he was ill that morning, and so he's had to reschedule, and we're actually working on bringing him back along with Ted Chablinski, I believe his name is, to talk about the increased use of involuntary commitment and a loosening of the laws that allows easier involuntary commitment and mandatory outpatient drugging, and also some of the struggle against that in Alaska by Jim Gottstein.
Yeah, that's great. I think that the same thing is probably happening here in Santa Cruz over at Dominican at the Behavioral Health Unit.
Do you have any personal experiences, or have you had anybody else who has recently reported such things to you?
Well, I have some personal experience. I was taken over there a couple of years ago, and I was in an isolation cell, and I heard, you know, across the hallway somebody saying, no, no, don't medicate me. And then what happened was he apparently got a shot.
Right.
So I figured that I should probably go along with it, and I had a couple of hearings. I even had somebody who was like, he wasn't exactly a public defender, but he was some type of public representative. Who
You're thinking probably of George Cavallo, the ombudsman, the homeless advocate, or?
Actually, it was not him. It was I think his name was Bob. But
go ahead.
He said at one point, he said, "Now is your chance to fight," you know, to say that I had been taken there unjustly, but I kind of let it go at that point in time. But I still think it's an interesting struggle.
How long were you actually held in Dominican?
Oh, I was there for, I don't know, maybe the better part of a week.
And were you medicated against your will?
Well, I had to take it, basically. Like I said, I heard somebody who was resisting, and he was basically strapped down, and so I took it. It was not exactly in my will, but it was close to being voluntary, I guess you would say.
Close to being voluntary, close to being involuntary?
Well, it was right there on the borderline, I guess.
You know, I mean, what Gottstein is looking for is to make sure, A, that everybody is fully informed of what the side effects of these drugs are, that they're offered the least restrictive alternative. And there are a couple of other conditions he's actually got the Alaska Supreme Court to look at. And you're supposed to have what's called, at least it used to be called, a Reese hearing here in Santa Cruz. It isn't a hearing before a judge. It's an in hospital administrative hearing where you can claim, look, I don't need to be medicated while I'm in the hospital. I can certainly make these choices with my doctor once I'm out looking it over. But right now I'm perfectly willing to not be a danger to myself, a danger to others, or gravely disabled, because those are supposedly the three criterion, although they've been weakened by the so-called Laura's Law, 14 SB 1421, I think it is. Which, you know, you can find. I've written something about it on IndieBay.org. If you Google for Robert Norse and Laura's Law, you might find something about it on online.
Yeah, because actually I still get mail, and I get this pamphlet every now and then. It says your hearing rights, and it's the same pamphlet over and over. So if I ever wanted to challenge the fact that I'm sort of like taking medication, then I might be able to go to a hearing before.
Are you still taking medication? Are they still requiring you to take medication?
Well, yes, I'm still taking it. And
but if they said, if you don't take it, we're going to, you know, recommit you, or we're going to arrest you, or we're going to throw you back in Dominican, is that part of the, or are you taking it because you think it's a good idea?
Well, you know, I resisted it. And actually, I was taking other things. I was taking several herbal medications, and I kind of was fond of those. But I've since acquiesced, and I go ahead and I take the Eli Lilly created stuff.
What exactly is it?
Do you want to know the names of them?
Yeah, if you're willing, I'm curious.
Well, one of them is just lithium.
Lithium.
And the other one is. The actual name of it is olanzapine, but the trade name of it is Zyprexa.
Oh, of course, yeah, Zyprexa is famous. Well, you know, in these situations, I'm a big anti-pharmaceutical guy, but there are some people who benefit from this stuff, or at least claim they do, and it's certainly every individual's choice to make this kind of decision. What concerns me if it's done in a coercive way, so that you sound like you said you acquiesced, which indicated to me that you were doing okay, or you would have preferred to take your herbal stuff.
You know, it was my own fault. I hit somebody. It was actually at St. Francis Soup Kitchen, and I hit a couple of the workers there. Or no, I hit a worker and a person who was eating.
Just out of the blue, or was there some provocation?
They didn't really provoke me, you know.
Do you have a problem? Is that a persistent problem have?
Yeah, it was kind of a persistent problem. One time at the armory, I hit somebody without much provocation either.
Because you got pissed?
Because I got pissed?
Because you got angry?
Yeah, I was jealous of him for talking to somebody else.
Uh-huh. And so, you think the medications are of assistance in addressing this?
Yeah, I think so. I mean,
more so than the herbal medication?
Well, it's a good question. I mean, I have gained weight. You know, they say they talk about side effects, you know, from these things like Zyprexa or antipsychotics or whatever. And I have gained weight, you know, and I'm not really happy about that.
Yeah, it tends to make, I think it has also, there's a potential diabetes problem, a couple of things. But, you know, It's also a problem, you know, obviously public safety for you and others if you're in a situation where you find yourself repeatedly, you know, drawn into violent confrontations.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is hard to advise people because I get pissed at people. I usually get verbally, you know, angry with people, not so much physically. What, you know, people can still be injured by verbal, you know, responses as well as physical ones.
Yeah, I was verbally aggressive at least.
You know,
there was a psychiatrist at the Garden Project.
Uh-huh.
He was on the board or something like that, and
right.
I verbally assaulted him too, and another man who was working for HPHP.
Well, it's I think it's okay to be critical and even express some hostility to certain people if you're doing so in a fashion because of specific things they're doing that you want to, you know, expose before the community, or it's a political thing, or even in a personal interaction. I guess my concern is that in the medication you take and in the way you're treated at Dominican and other places and by the police on the streets, for that matter, that you essentially are aware of your rights and feel able to assert them, and also that the community know what those rights are so that they can even assist you in asserting them or discourage authorities from inappropriate behavior, because authorities tend often to overstep their boundaries, often with what they think are the best of motives, but that actually aren't good.
Well, it was really strange. I mean, I fully expected to be taken to jail because I was at Page Smith and a couple of officers came into the unit and it seemed like they were kind of after me because I had been causing violence. I guess someone else must have said, that's the man and that's where he lives. And the officer then said to me, the officer who had me in his car said, we're taking you to the hospital. It was pretty weird, you know. I mean, instead of going, you know, and okay, you take your punishment, you get put in a jail cell for a while, and no, instead...
Would you have preferred to have dealt with the issue as a criminal matter rather than as a civil commitment thing, or...?
I think so, yeah. I mean, because I was, you know, I had one of these herbal medications, 5-HTP, I was told about by a doctor of Chinese medicine. The other ones have a long history of use, like St. John's wort, and actually the one I'm a little bit unsure about is Kava Kava. But the other ones, you know, I mean, they're 5-HTP helps to, in the same way that many of the other antidepressant drugs do, it increases the serotonin in your brain.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I don't know, I guess I just... Actually, I took way too many herbal medications at one time. If there's anything I could say to your listeners, it's just that just be careful when you're combining.
You know, it would be great if herbal. You and others who are... I'm sorry to interrupt you there, Corey. You know, it sounds like it's much better, for my money, when people who've had real problems, whether it's with violence or with, you know, any other psychological and spiritual difficulties that result in incarceration in hospitals or being labeled mentally ill, get together and share experiences so that they can figure out, you know, their own best medication. I mean, psychiatrists, frankly, in my view, don't usually know shit. I mean, you know, and again, I haven't seen a psychiatrist in years, but I really have a healthy distrust and disrespect for pharmaceutical and medical solutions to problems by people who've never had them, you know, have never really addressed them except in a sort of a, you know, I'll shock you from a distance or I'll incarcerate you here or there, or even if they have the best of motives. I think it's the people who've actually undergone these, you know, consciousness and mood altering problems that they have who are best equipped. And the problem, and there's, you're probably familiar with PERC, Psychiatric Inmates Rights Collective.
Psychiatric Inmates Rights Collective. No, I've never heard of that.
Give them a call. There's some people there who have been working for, you know, with what we call the victims of the psychiatric system, clients of the psychiatric system. The phone number for Jane Kaiser, if you got a pencil, I'll give it to you. And she has regular meetings, and you can call her and talk to her. Is, you got a pencil?
Just one second here.
Okay.
Here, I have a pen. Okay, so go ahead, Jane Kaiser.
It's 475-7904. 475-7904. She works again with PERC. And PERC is a group that's been around for about 20 years. They're not, you know, they're pretty small, and they aren't meeting as much as they used to, but they are concerned with fighting forced hospitalization, forced drugging, and also finding other solutions for people you know, then acquiescing to solutions that they don't really think are helpful for themselves. And that's kind of what I got for you today there, caller, although I'm no expert in the subject. I can tell you that right now.
Okay.
Thank you.
See you later.
Bye-bye. Phone lines are open, 427-3772. It's Dr. Robert here on the phone. I ain't no doctor. Give me a call if you want, 427-3772. If you got stuff you want to talk about off air, like you want to, or you want to be a part of the civil rights struggle that, for example, we'll be working on day after tomorrow at the Human Rights Fair, I'll be speaking there at 3:20 for those of you who are going to be wandering up to the day-long Loudon Nelson Fair. There's a big parade down Pacific Avenue that's nothing to do with this, with the Human Rights Day. It's a Merchant Money Day, you know, the Thanksgiving Fair. There are a couple thousand people show up in Santa Cruz to line Pacific Avenue. That happens, I think, 9 or 10 or 11 in the morning. And then throughout the rest of the afternoon until 8 o'clock at Loudon Nelson Center, there's going to be this Human Rights Fair, which is free. It's at 301 Center Street, in case you don't know where Loudon Nelson Center is. There are going to be arts and crafts, booths, music, drama, food, presentations by local groups such as HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. I'll be there at 3:20. We'll be tabling there. And then we'll be encouraging people to come afterward back out onto the streets to deal with real local civil rights issues here on the streets of Santa Cruz. It's all very well to have, you know, a memorial service for the 60th anniversary of the Declaration, the UN Declaration of Human Rights. But how is it actually being implemented or not implemented in Santa Cruz by all the bogus pseudo-liberals and non-progressives masquerading as progressives on the Santa Cruz City Council, who tonight are making it a crime for people to find their own and make their own shelter in Santa Cruz, even though there's shelter tonight for only about 160 to 180 of the 1,500 to 2,000 homeless people that are homeless in the city limits. So we're going to be sleeping out and in front of Borders, in front of the Borders bookstore, where there's been harassment of food service, harassment of religious singers, harassment of street artists, harassment of just ordinary people who are poor, who are trying to socialize there, and harassment of spare changers. Yes, I know, the dreaded panhandlers. That's going to be on the evening of Saturday, December 6th, and we invite you to come down for that. Then I want to remind you that on the morning of December 7th, here in this, when I come back for my long Sunday show, I will be having in the studio a debate discussion of free speech issues and, you know, human rights issues, because we are one day after the 60th anniversary of the UN Declaration of Human Rights, both on UCSC campus, University of California campus, and in the city of Santa Cruz with council member, Metro Transit Authority member, and Santa Cruz lecturer Mike Rotkin, who has been in the studio before and who I have crossed swords with before. Mike is a fearsome opponent. He is a guy who is intractably wedded to certain basic views, perhaps as I am, you know, on another side of the issue. He actually, along with Ryan Coonerty, our mayor, outgoing mayor, who will be, I guess Cynthia Matthews will be taking over his job next Tuesday when the city council has its last meeting of the year. He and Rotkin both oppose the UCSC regulations that apparently criminalize people who are off campus coming on campus to carry a sign, be a part of a political demonstration, give out a leaflet, unless they have authorization from a specific designated university representative. At least that is how the Good Times got the story. And that, to some extent, is what John Williams, who's the activist who will also be in the studio with Mike Rotkin, will be discussing this. We also invited Becky Johnson to be in the studio with us, but unfortunately she's doing something else, can't do it, and so we're looking for somebody. I may have to, turn over the show to someone else for the hour and try to raise the issues myself so that we can have somebody else as a moderator. I don't know. We're going to work on that. I'll be trying to resolve that in the next few days as to how that can be done. But anyway, Mike Rotkin will be in the studio from 9:30 to 10:30 on December 7th. That's, you know, Pearl Harbor Day, for those of you who remember ancient wars and things of that sort. So that's all coming up. And let's see what else we got among these interviews, and we'll see if we can actually hear some of them. Here we go.
So it is December 3rd, 2008, Wednesday. We did a somewhat half sunny, half overcast day. I'm down here in front of New Leaf, 1134 Pacific Avenue, Pacific and SoCal, listening to a couple of performers on the sidewalk. A plunkety plunk man with a small black hat, a couple of dollars in his cap. And the streets are kind of frosty. Can I read your button? And I'm standing with a woman who has probably the most buttons on her shirt of anyone except me, perhaps, although I don't have any buttons on at the moment. What is your name, Button Woman?
I'm Kathleen Crane.
Kathleen, you told me, we had a little chat here, you are a former Cabrillo student senator, you're an anthropologist, philosopher in waiting up at the UCSC, and just what else are you?
Well, I'm lots of things. I'm a progressive pragmatic, a feminist, fighting for civil rights and equal opportunity, all sorts of things.
Are you a lover?
Yes, and I'm a fighter.
And has love hurt you?
Hurts everybody. But, you know, that's probably the best thing about love is that it stings a little.
Really?
Gotta make you strong. You know, you can't love indiscriminately because people take advantage of you, do bad things. But, you know, love carefully can be rewarding. There's always pain.
You mentioned that you spent a lot of time down here on Pacific Avenue in your wilder, younger days.
Definitely. I used to come down here and pretend that I was homeless and hang out with all the street kids and do stupid stuff and grown up a little bit and decided that I like showers every day and clean clothes.
You look pretty clean cut.
Nowadays.
And how do you feel now seeing Pacific Avenue? We've noticed a crackdown by police, and there's been less people on the streets who are musicians playing, although this fellow's been twanging away here. A lot more tickets. You don't live downtown, right?
No, I live off of 17th now, but I've noticed that there's just a huge discrimination against people of a lower economic status than the norm. I mean, these people are down here because they don't have access to certain resources like houses or showers or food every day.
Do you speak from experience?
Yeah. Little bit of experience. You know, I used to camp out in the forest and spend like a week or two without a shower. Or
did you get ticketed?
Once, and got it taken care of with the help of HPHP. That's the homeless
Person's Health Project?
Yeah, over on Coral Street, which is awesome. And if you're ever in any trouble, just go ask some of the people over there, because they can really help you in figuring out ways to deal with the court system and the police and just figuring out ways to be safe and to keep yourself healthy in this situation where you can't access medical attention or proper care or nutrition. So they're very helpful.
So you're not outside. You commute every day to school?
Yes, I do. I commute, ride the bus, bicycle, use the car, work hard.
What kind of work?
I used to be a tutor and worked at Cabrillo College, tutoring people in philosophy of mind and all the other philosophy classes at Cabrillo. But now I just move dishes around at Sitar Indian Food today.
I used to have a good buffet when they had some meat on their buffet.
They still have it. You just order it separate.
You don't get all you can eat.
No, it's not all you can eat meat. But then again, it's maybe a good thing. Maybe we don't need so much animal protein in our diets. But
anything in the economic situation you want to comment on? Are you being impacted by the, well, now finally they're calling it a recession, but the situation we're in?
Yes, I am being impacted by this recession because my tuition prices keep going up. and my cost of living keeps going up. There is no way that this can continue like this.
It's all a part of the long-range development plan. Try to show some respect for the regions, okay?
Long-range unit. Yeah, it's long-reaching. It affects everybody in lower socioeconomic classes. You know, my minimum wage hasn't gone up to a point where I can actually support myself. I barely have a house. I barely get food every night. You know, I barely pay tuition. I'm in debt to go to school so that I can, you know, perhaps one day be in bigger debt.
Obama has a job for you over in Pakistan and Afghanistan to join our fighting troops.
Yeah, I'd really love to go kill some people right now. Just, no.
Maybe you could kill locally. That might be more effective if you target the right people.
Yeah, that might be more effective. You know, just go give me a gun and we'll go wipe out some people who need wiping out. But, you know, I don't think it's my responsibility or, you know, my ability to decide who should live and die. I think that's
just the president's job, right?
Yeah, right. I don't think he has any...
Robert Gates, his new Secretary of Defense.
Yeah.
Only a holdover, though. Keep that in mind.
Yeah, you know, I don't think these guys are smart enough to be able to decide who should live and die. You know, they're just people. We all make mistakes, screw up, you know. How can you say that this person deserves to die and this person deserves to live? How can you say that this person deserves to go and kill people and have that on their soul for the rest of their life, that they took a gun and accidentally killed civilians, you know?
It's all for the national defense.
National defense of what? I mean...
Our freedoms, our liberties. Oh, say, can you... Anyway, so we've been talking with...
Kathleen Crane.
And you want to conclude with?
Peace and liberty can only come from working hard within our own communities. Don't expect somebody high up to take care of you because they won't. They don't give a damn. Only you can help yourself.
I think we should take care of some of the people high up, you know what I mean?
Yeah, send them to Iraq. Let them see what it is.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Folks are listening to those three strummers. Just be pointed out that folks are sitting on the planter, middle class folks are sitting on the area where the fenced off railing has been, the railing in front of the Pacific Trading Company has moved. People are loosening up their wallets. It's good to see.
And the point is that homeless people are getting tickets for doing what middle-class people do as a matter of course.
No cops, and so far no complaints of day after Thanksgiving harassment. So, there, I took a bit of video of that, and so far no sign. Of course, I've only been out here 5 minutes, and it's, again, around 15 to 1 on November 28th. No sign of any law enforcement officials. Although very few signs of homeless people sitting either. There may have been earlier sweeps this morning, although it's not clear that any of that has happened either. You know, a lot of shoppers out, of course, on this day. A lot of traffic downtown. And very few people with backpacks or signs for panhandlers or normal street performers. Thank you. It is about 2:30 on Saturday, November 29th. I'm downtown on Pacific Avenue walking along up toward the metro. And I just got a report from...
Yakupov.
Say that again?
Yakupov.
Yakupov?
Yeah.
And Yakupov, what did you observe here at the metro that you...
Oh, nothing. I just passed through with the bike and I saw four policemen arresting a guy that I think it was an homeless, but I don't know. And I just drive through with the bike and I saw him and I was nothing, wondering if I had the
car now, apparently,
is like
rolling away.
Looks like no one's in the back of the car, but we'll see what happens when we get there. Where was this happening? What part of the metro? Right there on the corner?
Yeah, just there in the corner. You can see the guy with the, I don't know how do you call, yeah, the thing that you hang your hands.
The handcuffs?
Yeah. He's over there.
Okay, well let's check it out.
Yeah. I have to run.
Okay, well thank you, Yakov. Let's take a look and see what's going on. So I'm here right outside the Cafe Lena, and we see, looks like four police officers, and a man here right behind the Do Not Enter sign at the Metro being arrested, in handcuffs actually, and not sure exactly what's going on, but hopefully we'll find out. It's a sunny day, not much traffic. Yeah, we're apparently standing around, and we can find out what's going on. Did you see anything? What happened here? Were you present when this happened, or?
I was a quarter due because I just took my brother with all the money from my bus out to get home, and he just donated $1.30.
So what's going on here?
They busted my friend, man.
What's the name of your friend?
His name is Curtis Reeves.
And what's he being busted for?
Concealed weapon that they didn't have no search clause or nothing to mess with.
What kind of a weapon are we talking?
A 32.
Okay.
But he has his license, it's legal and everything. And it was unloaded.
Did they ask him if they could search his bag?
Yes, they did, and he said no, and they still search it.
Okay. But they're leading him off now.
Yeah.
Hey, thank you.
For what?
You don't have to talk to me.
Can you help me out with a quarter?
Probably, yeah.
Should I get on the bus?
Yeah.
Sure. What do you need, man?
Do you want me present while this is happening?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
At this point, a police officer tried to talk to this guy and wanted me to leave, and I said, well, I'll leave if you don't want me present, otherwise I'm going to stay. And this is the following conversation. It's interesting because of the kind of interactions. There's not a lot of drama or a lot of specific substance that comes out of this, but it's an example of, I'm kind of in a way modeling for what I think other people should do, which is if other people want you to be present when police officers are there as a witness, that you should do that. It's a good thing to do.
Hey, listen to me. It's my confidant.
Is Officer Azua? Yes, go ahead. Yes, sir.
I need to ask him some questions.
It's okay.
Okay.
He wants to have somebody present.
He wants you there.
Yeah.
I need to ask him his questions in private.
Why?
Because he'll explain to you if he wants to.
No, I want him right here with me, man.
So, he's already said that.
Okay. I need to ask him a specific question.
Go ahead.
Okay. Go ahead, sir.
Listen to me.
Yes, sir.
From the information that we got, you're the reporting party.
No, I'm not.
Okay, that's what we're getting told.
How am I the reporting party when that's my friend?
Okay. So why don't you hold up real quick and let me find out, okay?
No, I'm not no reporting party.
Okay.
That's my friend
right
there.
That's the information that we got.
How do they know it's me over the phone?
That I do not know. So
right, so
assuming.
You're just assuming.
No, I'm not. That's why I'm going to ask the other officer. Okay?
Why am I turning my friend in?
Listen to me. That's why I'm going to ask the officers. Can you hold up real quick?
This,
I don't want to ask you questions.
Bizarre, man.
If you're the RP and that goes on that. You hear me?
No, it's not me. What the hell are you talking about, man?
Do you understand what I'm trying to say?
Me and my brother are sitting.
Ask him if you're free to go.
Am I free to go?
If you want to go, you're more than welcome to go.
Thank you. But I want to be noted that I am not the reporting party because that is my friend. We were sitting here waiting for a bus.
Okay. All right, then.
Can you prove that?
Listen to me. I'm just going to
Can you prove that, officer?
I'm not here to argue. If you don't want to talk to me, you don't want to talk to me.
Thank you very much. Bye. Thanks, sir.
Sure. I mean,
I listen to the show all the time.
Dude. Okay. Okay.
Trust me.
All right.
I know. I'm the reporting party on my friend.
Okay.
We're just sitting here waiting for a bus, man.
Alrighty. Well, anything you want to say more? What's your name?
My name is David Faulkner, alias known as Greyhound, and everybody knows me.
And David, what exactly happened?
The police just walked up on my friend.
What did they say?
They said, up against the wall, you got any guns or anything like that? And they put him up against the wall.
Did they say what they were arresting him for?
And they wanted to search my backpack and this and that, and I told them, go ahead, and I'm clean, and I thought he was clean, and everything was cool, man. But they just wanted to push it. I think the police force down here is getting a little bit too out of hand. It's not right. It's not right, especially when they say that I'm the reporting party when it's my friend sitting next to me.
So it's a little unclear whether David agreed to a search, either of his stuff or his friend's stuff. Initially, I think he said he didn't. Now he said he did. Or he said, no, I'm clean, go ahead. That's, by the way, not a good idea when the police arrive. You politely decline, you know, and audibly decline to be searched if the police arrive. You don't, you know, necessarily resist, but you tell them really clearly, I do not wish to be searched.
Right. You also have the right to talk to them if you want. If you choose to, you certainly can talk to, but you don't have to talk to police officers unless they tell you you're being detained, and then you have the right to say nothing, you know.
How are you?
All right, Officer Forbes, how's it going?
Good, good. Can you give me 1 minute? I need to talk to this gentleman, and then I'm sure he'll be able to fill you all in on everything you need to know.
Well, it depends on what he wants. Would you want me to be here recording?
Yeah, that's all right. I'll talk to this guy real
okay.
quick.
So at this point, Officer Forbes came up, whereas the guy did not want Officer Azua to talk to him without me being present. Suddenly it was okay for Officer Forbes. This, in my mind, of course, is a mistake, because police officers are all working for the same department. They're all looking for the same kind of thing, evidence of a crime. And if you don't want to talk to one, you probably don't want to talk to another, generally speaking. But that was the decision of David Faulkner, a.k.a. Greyhound, in this situation.
Give me 1 second, I'm sure.
No problem. So, David, I believe his name is, the fellow who we were just speaking to, is talking to Officer Forbes. Which Officer Forbes? D. Forbes. It's not clear, but...
Because apparently there are two Forbeses on the force, I'm told. Dan and David. At least one of these Forbeses is notorious downtown for harassing street performers, food servers, other people, with infraction citations for such crimes as sitting near a building, sitting on the lip of the planters that are around the trees, even though they're just concrete planters. It harms nothing to sit there, in order to drive away groups of people, based simply upon his perception or that of some meddler who's a merchant or a resident downtown, that they don't like to see those groups of people together.
I'm kind of hanging out. That's Dan Forbes. Okay, well, here we have a witness to this whole affair. What exactly did you see, and how did it begin?
I just kind of noticed when I was across the parking lot, and there were several police officers just kind of converging on a spot over right on where the guy was sitting down on the bench over here. And so they kind of went over there in a group. And they had, like, hands on guns, but I didn't know what was going on, so I just kind of watched.
Uh-huh. Your name is, by the way?
I'm Tristan Call. I'm actually from Utah, just visiting here.
Welcome to Santa Cruz.
Yeah, thanks. And then... I guess they, whatever happened over on the other side finished and they moved on. The guy that they seemed to be asking questions of left. Then they came over to where the guy that just got arrested and his friend were. And it seemed like they were about to leave, but then they saw him or something, and then they came over. And they cuffed him, and then it was about maybe a minute and a half later, they told him he was being detained. After they cuffed him. And I don't know what the exchange was over searching or giving him permission to search or anything like that, but I just went over and took a couple of pictures while they were searching his bag.
So let me give you my number. Maybe you give me your number in case he contacts me and wants the photos.
Sure, sure.
Were you folks witnesses to any of this, or?
Just what he talked. I was with him. Yeah. So.
And you too were witnesses.
Well, I just came up and I was going on.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they checked. They had somebody over there detained too, but they
another
let
person.
Go. They were checking them.
Did you hear any of the conversation that indicated what they were doing, what they were looking for?
Something they were saying something about shoplifting, but I don't know what. I'm pretty sure I heard one of the police saying we're looking for something regarding shoplifting, but I don't. I may have misheard, or maybe I'm even making it up, but I'm pretty sure I heard something like that. But
and you guys didn't hear anything?
No.
Okay. Well, he was. One of the individuals taken into custody and searched, according to his friend, had a licensed, unloaded weapon in his backpack, which probably isn't neither here nor there. weapon meaning a gun.
Right.
They did put something in a brown paper bag, a little evidence bag they put in their trunk, it looked like. So I don't know whether that was it or something
right.
else.
But, I mean, did they have a cause to search in the first place? What were they doing? That's the question.
He was clearly just kind of sitting there at the very beginning, like the guy that was detained. So.
Yeah. The guy that was put into the squad car.
Right. Right. So. He didn't seem to be doing anything particularly questionable. He was just sitting at the beginning. So
they let that other guy go over there.
What was he doing then?
He was just by his bike. You know, minding his own business, and they started checking and searching him.
Did he object, or did he? Because you don't have to consent to a search. You can say, I don't want to be searched.
He was pretty far away, so it was kind of hard to tell what was going on over there.
And what's your name?
Oh, Kika.
And you are?
I'm Kate.
Hey, Kate. So are you all just sort of didn't know each other? You two knew each other?
Yeah. We're here traveling.
I'm from Santa Cruz.
Welcome.
I've heard you talk before, on TV and stuff like that.
I do a radio show. I'll probably play some of this on the radio tomorrow, though it's not too clear what's going on.
You're an applicant, right?
Yes.
Yeah. That's good that you do that here in Santa Cruz.
Here. I agree. Yeah. For sure. Well, you know, if you see more happening, here's my card. Actually, we're going to be meeting up at the Taqueria right there on the corner, the Taqueria at Calf Garden Pacific, the Mexican place.
Mm-hmm.
Come on up, and if you're hanging around more, and let me know what's going on. The police have kind of separated this guy from me. I mean, he's chosen to talk to them, which often is not the wisest thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
Because the police are trying to gather evidence for criminal behavior and justify what they do, too. So I don't know what the hell's going on here, actually.
When do you meet?
We're listening to the song of...
And before we get to the song part of the show, that's an example of trying to put together pieces of what's happening. This was an incident at the Metro that happened last Saturday. I didn't really figure out what went down, but we're going to be doing more of this kind of thing on this coming Saturday in front of Borders, and I invite you to come join us. If you want more information, come to the Human Rights Organization's booth. We're going to be at the Human Rights Day Fair, which is going to be happening all day from noon to 9, or maybe it's from 11:30 to 8. It's not quite clear. Anyway, it's all throughout the afternoon at the Loudon Nelson Center, which is at 301 Center Street. And I'll be speaking at 3:20 for about 5 minutes. A bunch of other speakers are going to be speaking through the day. Very interesting stuff, probably. I don't know how much of it is actually going to be relevant to Santa Cruz, which really is my concern. That's why I play a lot of interviews, some of which may sound repetitive, some of which may sound partial. They are partial in the sense that they are a particular person's opinion, a particular person's perspective. You're not hearing the police department perspective. You're not hearing the perspective of individuals who are watching from a distance, although occasionally we get that too. So, you know, you have to take that into consideration when you listen to these accounts. But these are voices you would not otherwise hear. These are the voices the Sentinel does not quote. You're not going to read about them in the Metro. You don't hear them about them in City on the Hill usually. Good Times couldn't care less. And the radio stations, other than free radio, don't give a shit about these people. And usually regarding them as suspicious, criminal, taking their cues from the police department and, you know, the more, quote, respectable authorities. And that is why I do this. And that's why I think it's really important that we keep our eyes open and see what's going on, which is what I'll be doing on Saturday night, cop watching before the sleep out. So actually it's a double purpose. Huff, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, the group I'm with, and the Human Rights Organization are going to be engaging in two things. We're going to be setting up a table in front of Borders and doing a cop watch. We'll be following police officers around with a video camera to keep an eye on what they're doing, observe their stops with people, not interfering, but observing. Although I tend to become quite vocal when I see police officers violating the law or harassing people, and I do call over witnesses. That's not a traditional cop-watching activity, but it is something I do because I think police department behavior needs to be recorded and observed, and in some cases, deterred. And by that I mean not deterred in the direct way of, you know, tearing a prisoner away from a police officer, but letting the police department know the community's opinion of what she or he is doing on the street when they go after, harass poor people for things that they allow middle class and wealthy people to do as a matter of course, like walk their dogs on Pacific Avenue, or sit down near a building, or play music without harassment, things of this sort, this kind of selective enforcement, which is the rule in Santa Cruz these days, and particularly becomes really noticeable during the Coonerty crackdown in the last few months. Mayor Coonerty, of course, is the outgoing mayor, but unfortunately he is going to be on the back on the city council again, along with Councilmember Madrigal, who won by 42 votes. I'll be talking more about that on Sunday. And there is the last city council meeting of the year coming up. So, again, I invite you, if you want to do some cop watching, you can come to our table at the Loudoun Nelson Center on Saturday. There's not going to be a human rights organization meeting that day since we'll be tabling all day over at the Loudoun Nelson. Then you can come to our table and have some hot soup. I understand Jumbo Gumbo Joe Schultz, a world-famous caterer. I don't know if he's actually world-famous. I guess he probably is famous in different places. He's quite a... had his own restaurant, India Joe's. He's going to be serving soup probably around 9:15 or 9:30 in front of Borders. So, you know, join the soup parade, or the soup line, if you will, as times get tougher and the weather gets colder. And then we're going to be doing a sleepout downtown because people have no legal place to go. We believe these are human rights violations when the city routinely harasses, cites, and arrests people for doing what they have to do, sleep at night. Not anywhere and everywhere, but somewhere they have to have the legal right to sleep. And Los Angeles, the laws were overturned by the courts. San Diego laws were overturned. Fresno's laws were overturned in the sense that they've not, they don't know, the camping ordinance was beaten back. Palo Alto allows its homeless to sleep. Richmond has made a provision. I keep repeating this on the air for those who don't know, and for those of you who do know, just to remind you that Santa Cruz continues to stand out as a repressive city that criminalizes poor people who sleep at night. Tonight, on December 4th, 2008, it's still happening. So on December 6th, 2008, we will be sleeping out and possibly getting ticketed by the police department for our criminal sleep crime activities. So come and be a part of this if you'd like. Check us out. And you can always, if you can't come down to the Human Rights Fair down at Loudoun Nelson on Saturday, or you can't come to the Borders.
Two verses of the song
Blues Man
by
Keith Sweezy.
Thank you, Keith. Any other reports from the street about local activities here?
Not really. Nothing going on right now.
Pretty mellow?
Yeah, generally.
No hassles, no tickets?
Not as many police today as there have been, yeah.
How about yesterday?
Wasn't out here yesterday, but I got a ticket a couple days ago.
For
soliciting as a group. I was actually just playing guitar on the street corner, and this guy came and sat next to me to listen to my song. And we were actually just about to get up and leave, and the cop comes and gives both of us a ticket for soliciting as a group.
Actually, playing music is not the same as panhandling. There's a different code section. I don't know if you've been told this. If you're just panhandling, you can't sit in a group of two. If you're playing music, you can sit in a group of as many people as you want, assuming you're not breaking other laws.
Oh, really? Well.
Or if you're engaging in a performance for which you put out a case, there are rules about where you can place the case and how far from buildings you have to be, but it's not, you're not subject to the panhandling ordinance.
Cool. Yeah. We're actually, like, about 2 feet in violation of the how close you can be to a crosswalk, but one officer a couple days before told me it was 10 feet, and then this officer said it was 15, and it's just, it's, the rules,
man. It's 14 feet if you're panhandling, it's 10 feet if you are, if you have a display device.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I thought.
And a display device is what you have. This is a display device. It says, hitching to North Carolina to California, anything helps? Hugs for nugs. Have you gotten any nugs?
A couple.
Have you gotten any hugs?
A few.
Well, I will say no more.
Thank you. My hand.
And back in town is the notorious Dreamcatcher. Support my art. Great Christmas gifts. You got some nice ink drawings of feathers here in front of Borders. Dreamcatcher, what dreams have you caught on your journey north?
And that's it for Bathrop Spears Broadsides. Coming up next, from the cream to the dregs with Uncle Dennis. Back on Sunday with Mike Rotkin. Actually, we're going to be having an interview with, on harm reduction. Needle exchange woman is coming in to talk earlier around 9 o'clock, then Rotkin at 9:30 to 10:30. Hey, it should be a lively show. And then check me out, of course, on Saturday at the Human Rights Fair. I'll be down there at Loudoun Nelson Center at night in Borders, snoozing away, watching the cops, and maybe getting a ticket. Talk to you then. 423-4833 if you want to talk to me off air.
I'm gonna make you mine. rock and roll right here on Free Radio Santa Cruz 101.1 and www.freakradio.org. Good evening. My name is Uncle Dennis, and you are listening to From the Cream to the Dregs. That there was the Flamin' Groovies, and we're going to be playing a lot more rock and roll, so stay tuned. Donate if you can, and keep us on the air.
Your life, and you can do what you want. what you love.